Shabbat Shalom, everyone. My name is daughter of Yisrael Abel Shamaria, and I want to serve you forever as a priestess starting very soon. Please start finding your seats for Sabbath services. Shabbat Shalom, everyone. My name is Dada Yisrael Abel Sarah, and I want to serve you forever as a priestess starting very soon. It's an honor and privilege to introduce to you the sons and daughters of Yisrael Abel now entering the sanctuary. Now I'll turn it over to the great priest in the house of Yahweh.
Shalom, everyone. Please be seated. Okay, the title of my speech today is The One Man in These Last Days Who Has Been Chosen and Anointed by Yahweh to Reside in the Chief of the Nations. In just a few minutes, you will be hearing a message brought to you by this man, which plainly shows in the scriptures that he is one of Yahweh's last two witnesses that are shown in Revelations 11. And if you can turn to Revelations 11, we're going to be reading Revelations 2 and 3. No, I apologize. 3 and 4. Revelations 3 and 4. And I will give to my two witnesses. Now, these are Yahweh's two witnesses, not the witnesses of the world, not the witnesses of the gods. This is Yahweh's two witnesses to perform their prophetic offices. And we are living in one of the witnesses' prophetic office right now. Think on that. Just let that sink in. A prophetic office that was prophesied by Yahweh and written of in Revelations 11. And they will foretell events about the 3.5 years those cast about in darkness. As the overseers brought out, we are in that last 3.5 years right now. These are the two olive trees, and as it were, the two lamps of the seven lampstand, ministering for the Father in the earth. Now, several speakers are going to continue on with what I'm speaking, bringing you inspired messages from the Yametria that the overseer has explained to us was inspired by Yahweh himself. And they're going to be bringing this message about this man. So you need to stay tuned in. You need to listen intently. Listen intelligently. Take notes. Because you don't want to miss the message that he is bringing out today. And again, what I wanted to tell you about is one of the numbers I had put in a while ago. I had done a speech and I had done Numbered by Yahweh. And when I did the Numbered by Yahweh, and you can check this out on the Yametria yourself. You can put Numbered by Yahweh in just exactly as it's written. And you can look up the numbers that will be coming up. The English number is, can anybody guess it? Numbered by Yahweh. We are numbered by the same number. Numbered by Yahweh. His tag number? 1074. And if I can have my slide, please. Now, 1074 had come up. I had done a research on the temple prophecy. And on 11/22/1993, the prophecy, the temple patent was filed. And 11/22, you can see, means established. The house of Yahweh is established in these last days. The fruits, now his other number is 17. 17 comes from 18. And it means the bringing forth of fruits. We are that fruit that he is bringing forth in these last days. And then you go down to 1074, which comes from the Hebrew, and it means firstborn. It also means new fruits. And if you continue looking at that, you can see the other numbers. Now, the reason why I wanted to go into this is in the last days, in the chief of the nations, this prophecy is going to be fulfilled. Now, the overseer had brought out several times about how the United States is like the second beast. It is that chief of the nations that is talked about in prophecy. And I have two articles here. And it goes into to explain that the United States became the chief of the nations after World War II. The economic power was over there in Europe. That's where the economic power was until World War II. And the reason why the United States became the chief of the nations and became the economical power at that time was because they sold weapons to the countries in that fourth part of the earth, in and around the Great River Euphrates. Now, it wasn't the Middle East, but it's in that fourth part of the earth, in and around the Great River Euphrates. That's how the overseer brought, told us how we can tell what fourth part of the earth he is talking about. The United States sold weapons to the countries in that fourth part of the earth during World War II, so that that fourth part of the earth area could be destroyed. And the United Kingdom gave their power, economical power, to the United States, which led to the United States having all the gold reserves, which led to the United States creating the petrodollar, which led to the prophecy being fulfilled. Hurt not the oil. Now, I ask you to please, please stay tuned. Listen intelligently. Take notes. Hear what he has to say. You do not want to miss this message that Yahweh's last day's witness is bringing to us in this last three and a half years. And with that, I will turn it over to the next speaker.
Shabbat shalom, everyone. You can be seated. So, Buffalo Bill Hawkins. Are you familiar with that name? Yes, praise Yahweh. So, it's not once or twice that Pastor has told us the story about him being named by his one-year-old brother, right? And we know that's something that is unheard of for a one-year-old to name someone, not even just to utter clearly words. So I put in the image here, named by a one-year-old, and he came to those numbers. See the 1074? Praise Yahweh. And we know that that is the overseer's tag number for his suburban. The other number is 179, and it means indissoluble, that is figuratively permanent, endless. This is it. This is permanent. See, the first house of Yahweh, they had the opportunity to be the permanent ones. But just as we've been hearing sermons about rejection lately, they rejected it. It first started with Eve being deceived, and then she taught Cain wrong. And Adam failed by responding or allowing his emotions to cloud over his righteous judgment. But Yahweh, being so merciful, he said that in these last days I will establish my house. They will have a high priest. And I will protect my house too. So, in the 18th book of Israel, Pastor talks about the expanding the sanctuary. It's in the chapter 7 of the 18th book of Israel. So, expand the sanctuary. It came to those numbers. And the first one, 219, it means luminous, that is figuratively prosperity. And it's from 215, which means illumination, are concretely luminary, in every sense, including lightning, joyness. And it's from 215, which also means to be causatively made luminous. And when you talk about this luminousness, you think about light. And we all know that the laws of Yahweh are light. The other number is 1314, and in the Greek it means to guard thoroughly, that is, protect. And we know that this is the only place in the whole world that is protected at this time.
And it's also the sanctuary city. Sanctuary city, 1074. Again, that is the overseer's tag number for his Ababian. And as we heard from the Sabbath that the women did the presentation, it's clear that the word of the overseer has gone out to the whole world to come home, come to the house of Yahweh. And why is that? Because the saints will be delivered at end days. And when you put that in the Yametria, the saints will be delivered at end days, you have a 322 among those numbers. And we know that's the overseer's tag number for his van. So who are the saints? The saints are those who keep Yahweh's laws. True saints, 1074. Again, that is the overseer's tag number for his Sabbatian. And it's not only just the 1074, we also have the 828, which is the overseer's date of birth, the 28th of the 8th Roman month. So that is so undeniable. You agree? Praise Yahweh. So going back to named by a one-year-old, the other number was 1138, and 1138 means to build, from 1129, which means to build literally or figuratively, begin to build, obtain children, make and repair. Yahweh is building us up, the house of Yahweh. Yahweh is establishing us up as the people. We know that the house of Yahweh is not just this building, it's the people who are in it. Yahweh is establishing us up through his last days anointed witness. And if you read Zechariah chapter 5, verse 10 and 11, it says, starting from in between the line in verse 10, it says, "Where are they, the two witnesses, going with the ephah?" And he said to me, "To build the house of Yahweh according to the standard of perfection." Notice that, to build the house of Yahweh. To build the house of Yahweh according to the standard of perfection sent by Yahweh's laws in a Babylonish land which does not yet exist. And it will be established at that time when the two witnesses are called out to their work as the established place, the habitation of Yahweh, the house of Yahweh. So, you who have ears, you all the people out there in the world, you who have ears, please hear, listen to this message. Hear the words of the last days anointed witness. Because have the ears to hear, 1074 again. That's the overseer's tag number for his Sabbatian. See, 1074 is a number that tags all of us out with the overseer, the whole house of Yahweh with the overseer. So, you who have ears, please listen to the message and come to the house of Yahweh. And with this, I'll turn to the next teacher.
Shalom, everyone. Please be seated. All right, so we're going to be going over a Yametria that we have here, the N. Could we get that, please? All right, and we have the three numbers, 56. I'm sure we all know what that one is. 336 and 162. Okay, so now we have the definitions. You can see that. We're going to go over that first definition, Hebrew word number 162. We see there the word expressing pain. Oh, alas. And tie that in with the end. What does that make us think of? What scripture? We have the Greek word, Greek 162, from Greek 164, to capture, to lead captive, and then we have 164, a spear or a prisoner of war. And those two, we have Revelation 18, remember, alas, or woe, that great city that fell in 1 hour, and the leading captive, that's in Revelation 13 for a reference. Remember what Overseer taught us there? Actually, you can turn there right quick. Revelation 13, verse 10, he who is for captivity will go into captivity. He who is for the sword must be killed with the sword. This is all in the time of the end. Herein is the patience and the faith of the saints tested. All right, so back to our definitions. We have the Greek word number 336 from 337, and that's an act of killing or death. 337 means to take away violently, abolish, murder, kill, slay, and put to death. We know that's all prophesied for this time period. Now, get that Hebrew word number 56. You see, it's the Hebrew word abal, which is the root word for Abel. We all know that, right? Yes, to bewail, lament, mourn, from 11, the Greek is from 1108, ignorance. Okay, so going with that, Abel, that's us, the house of Yahweh, that ties us into this time period of the end, the time period of the killings, the murders, the one-hour burning, the leading into captivity. That's what the quartet is all being a part of right now. And our job in these last days is to preach the message of the kingdom of Yahweh. That's what Yahshua said that we would do in Matthew 24:14. And just like we've been seeing, the tag number, 1074, Abel, that's on everything in this generation. All of us, we're all tagged with our overseer's tag number. Micaiah 4:1-3, we know that in the last days, Yahweh said he would establish his house. The last days is the end, or that generation. Now, we want to get into the word end of the age in the book of Yahweh, Matthew 24:3. Let's read that. Matthew 24, where Yahshua is doing the speaking, and verse 23 on page 752 in the book of Yahweh. Now, as he sat on the Mount of Olives, the disciples came to him privately, saying, "Tell us, when will these things be? What will be the sign of your coming and the end of the age?" Now, you see that word age? In the King James Version, it says world, the end of the world. Okay? That word world, in the Greek, it's Hebrew number 165. And if we can have that, you see right there, the words underline and age. Messianic time period, or of present or future. And then you have other words, ever, world, never, evermore, age, eternal. Now, if you skip down and look to where it says, the primary stress of this word is time in its unbroken duration. Skip down again where it says means an age or era, where it says 1B. Do you see the word time? Period. Time viewed in relation to what takes place in the period. Now, we just went over some of the things in a nutshell of what's taking place in this time period, the killing, the murder, and at the same time, Yahweh's house prophesied in the last days. But that word world, it doesn't mean, Yahweh's not saying the end of the world, the end of the earth, right? Like the earth is just going to somehow get chopped off or something like that, or quit existing. It's not the end of the world, neither is it the end of all mankind. But it's the end of a prophesied age or allotted time period. Did you see where it said a time period? An allotted time period. The end of the age is the end of a set prophesied time period. That's the time period that Yahweh allowed to Satan and her gods, 6,000 years. And he showed that in his plan, the way he set things up, like 6 days you should do your own work and the seventh day is the Sabbath. Right? Six of those 1,000-year periods is given to mankind and her gods to show what following sin and the way of sin, iniquity, putting aside Yahweh's laws, evil will bring. And we also know that it's also causing wars in heavens. So all of this is all taking place in this time period. In this time period, we have the house of Yahweh, and we're getting to the end of that sixth day, or that sixth 1,000-year time period. This is what our overseer is telling us when he spoke the last time, the Feast of Tabernacles. We have 6 days, right, that represents the six 1,000-year time periods given to mankind. We have the seventh day, which is the 1,000 millennial reign, and then the last great day. Pictures when everything's given over to mankind. And that's mankind that Yahweh said he, in Genesis 1:26, was creating to give him authority. And we see he has seven works to bring forth mankind. And remember, he told us Abel was one of mankind. Abraham was one of mankind. Yezra Hawkins is one of mankind. Yahshua is. And we can all be one of those mankind. And we can rejoice that Yahshua said in Matthew 16:18 that the gates of hell will not prevail against Yahweh's work. And everything's going according to Yahweh's plan. We know that in Yochanan 1:1-3, right? Nothing that is done or has been done is not without Yahweh's permission. Nothing that's going on in the earth or in the heavens is without Yahweh's permission. He's allowing it for a lesson to be taught, and his house will never be destroyed this time. So with this, y'all, please stand. I'm going to turn it over to the next speaker.
Shabbat shalom, great saints of Yahweh. Please be seated. Yahweh's peace be with each and every one of you. The title of this portion will be Teach Us to Love. And I want you to put right next to it 1074, because everyone who teaches true love is tagged with that number 1074, which is the overseer's tag on his van. So by a show of hands, has anybody heard of the terms like love is blind, or they wore rose-colored glasses, or there's a thin line between love and hate? Nod your heads. Oh, praise Yahweh. Okay. So it's very interesting. So I'm going to quote from the newscientist.com. New scans of the brain's hate circuits, quote unquote, have confirmed similarities between these two powerful emotions. So I looked up the definition of love on google.com because we wanted to find what they're defining as love. So from google.com, it's defined as an intense feeling of deep affection, a great interest and pleasure in something. Then I also looked up what hate is defined as. And hate is defined as a feeling of intense or passionate dislike towards someone or something. So I brought a picture with me of where these two emotions operate. Now this blue portion is called the putamen, and that's where we have our emotions of like to move. And this front part right here, this is our frontal cortex, and this is where we have our decision making. We have that part of the brain controls key functions such as problem solving, judgment, impulse control, attention, judging the consequences of our actions, and critical thinking. So what's interesting is that these two completely different emotions, the emotion of deep affection and the emotion of intense dislike towards something or someone, they both operate in the same part of the brain. But they produce two different reactions. So in the presence of a loved one, our frontal cortex, what occurs is our judgment level is deactivated. Or this part of the brain, the way we judge someone is decreased. But when we are in the presence of someone that we might dislike, that our frontal cortex is heightened, and there's more going on up here. And so I'm going to share with you an example. So somebody comes in, and they touch me. And there's someone I'm not too comfortable with, so I'm like, why are they touching me? And in another case, if somebody I'm well comfortable with, it doesn't bother as much. So there's two different reactions, but they both operate in the same part of the brain. So obviously, from this, we can clearly see that our emotions can impair our judgment or our decision-making. And it's the emotions, if we're not controlled, they can distort our perception of reality. So in any given situation, if we don't control our emotions, then they will have an effect on the part of the brain that we base our decision-making, base our judgments, base our problem-solving skills. And this made me think of, you know, going back to the scriptures, because hate can lead to anger, then anger can lead to the wars, vengeance, and retaliations. So as Yeshua said, anyone who hates his brother is a murderer, and you know that no murderer has eternal life abiding in him. And this is what separates Yahweh's way from the ways of the gods. In Yochanan 13:35, it says, by this, all men will know that you are my disciples by the love you have for one another. And then in 2 John 1:5-6, but now I plead with you, lady, not as though I write any new laws to you, but that we had heard from the beginning that we love one another. Verse 6, and this is love, that we walk after his laws. Those are the laws that as you have heard from the beginning, you should walk in them. Because sin is the breaking of Yahweh's laws, as mentioned in 1 John 3:4. For sin is a transgression of the law. And this is the cause of the hatred, the wars, and vengeance, and retaliation. So I wanted to bring that to my attention as a very great reminder, because our emotions can play a trick on our mind on making decisions. I have to control my emotions so that I can properly make great, righteous choices and get those emotions out of the way so that I can properly think and reason with my mind. And with this, If you go on toward love and righteous works according to Yahweh's laws, statutes, and judgments, as we prepare for the great feast of Passover and unleavened bread, if you'd all please stand, I would like to turn it over to the next teacher.
Shabbat Shalom. Please be seated. As you can see up on the screen, that we're going to be talking about an evil tree, and that's 666, Revelation 13, 18, the number of the beast. This week I was reading one of Pastor's blogs, and in it he really expounded on this tree of evil and righteousness. And only the overseer, who's prophesied in these last days as the last witness, went into great detail expounding on these. So in Genesis 2:9, that's where the trees show up. The tree of life, which is the house of Yahweh, and the tree of righteousness and evil, which we know is the Catholic Church. Evil as the gods, Genesis 3:5. Pastor went on to show in Matthias 7:18 that a righteous tree cannot bring forth iniquity, and an unrighteous tree, an evil tree, cannot produce righteousness. Now let's go to page 204 in our scriptures, and that's Judges chapter 6. That's the account of Gideon. I'm just going to go over this just a little. So the Malach of Yahweh, what came to Gideon, appeared to him, and he said, Gideon, you're going to save Israel from the Midianites. He said, not me. He said, I'm too low, I'm the lowest, I can't do it. He said, okay, just go. So he made an altar to Yahweh. And then the Malach came and said, you know, you need to go and to your father's place over there and tear down that altar of Baal. And then you also need to chop down that Asherah pole that he has up. So you can imagine how Gideon, he had a little doubt about Yahweh anyway, about that he'd be with them. So he didn't do it during the day. He went and did it at nighttime. So, of course, they found out who did it. And so the Midianites started to plan to come after him. So he called the tribes of Asher, Naphtali, and Zebulun. He called the Asherites to come and help. And then he still doubted. So then Yahweh said to him, Gideon, you have too many. Ask everybody who's afraid. And if they're afraid, let them go. He started out with 32,000 men, 22,000 left at that point. So I'm thinking he's not quite as confident as he was with 32,000. So Yahweh said to him again, Gideon, you still have too many. So now send them down to the water and have them get a drink and watch. See who laps the water with their tongue as they bring it up. And those will be yours. After that, Gideon sent 9,700 away. So I'm wondering really how he felt at that point. So Yahweh told Gideon then to go down to the Midian camp, and he will hear something that will build his confidence and know that Yahweh is with him. So he said, but if you're afraid, take your friend Pura with you. So he did. He took Pura with him. They went down, and then Gideon was satisfied. So he went back to his people, and he said, come, now Yahweh is with us. And in verse 17 of chapter 7, you know, he gives them instruction here. The first instruction he gives them is, keep your eye upon me. And the second instruction he gives, do exactly as I do. So they were getting ready to go, and they all shouted, a sword for Yahweh and a sword for Gideon. So now, they went down, and of course, the camp of Midian was confused, and they killed each other. Their own people killed each other. Gideon didn't even have to lift a sword, so Yahweh was with him. But I want you to realize, and as I show through Yematria, this story isn't just talking about Gideon. This is a representation of our great overseer in these last days. So let's get started with the Yematria. And just get ready to write these things down because it's like so exciting to see. So the first thing we want to see is is the overseer really Gideon of the end days? So you see, he is. Not only is his birth date there, 828, but when you add those three numbers up, you get the 2088, which is, in Hebrew, the one that shows the two witnesses spoken of in Daniel 12:5. So the one on this side and the other. Then if you take those zeros away, you get Deuteronomy 18:18, which Yahweh always has told us, I will raise up for you a prophet like me in these last days, and him you must listen to. So Gideon's name means to fell a tree. That's what Gideon means. So who fells the evil tree at the end days? We see right there 322. That's the number that belongs only to the great overseer in these last days. And let's go look at the next one, because Israel's felling the tree. That's the answer. And it's still 322. So you see, the overseer is the one who is chopping away at this tree in these last days. Now let's go on to the next one, and you'll see who is chopping down the Asherah pole. And you see that number 1962? That is the date that our great overseer first went on the radio to start chopping at this tree and chopping it down. Let's go on to the next one. And then we'll see that instruction that was given. Gideon said, keep your eyes on me. So I put, keep eyes on me. Who are we to watch? Who are we to see? No one else except Israel Abel Hawkins. He will lead us into this kingdom, and he will continue to chop at this tree until it's gone. So let's go to the second instruction. He said, do as I do. Act exactly like I do. 1074. If you see Israel Hawkins, if you walk like Israel Hawkins, you're going to be successful, because he is the one that's making a way for us into this great kingdom. Now, remember what they shouted? Well, we'll shout, a sword for Yahweh and for Israel. And you see that 2022? That's Isaiah 2:2, Micaiah 4:1. In the last days, I will establish my house, Yahweh says. I will establish my house, and it's through his house that we will enter into the great kingdom of Yahweh. Now, what is the axe? Look at that, 828. It's amazing that this is the man that is chopping down at the tree. As Luke 3, you can put that in my note. Luke 3 says that axe would be laid at the root of the tree. Now, there is only one, and that's this one right here. He is the one that is chopping away at the tree. We are in support of him. So when that axe gets heavy, we can help pick it up too. Now, the more we get behind this man and support him and encourage him and help him, just as he has always done for us all these years, this tree is coming down, this Catholic Church is coming down, and it will never come up again, because this is a man that will put an end to all suffering, sin, with under the beholding of Yeshua and Yahweh's guidance, of course. But he is the one in these last days that Yahweh has ordained. And I would encourage you, if you're sitting under one of these trees, you know, if you're not sitting under the tree of life at the house of Yahweh, get out from under any other tree you're sitting, because it's going to fall soon. So just as the apostles had the acts of the apostles, we have the acts of Israel Hawkins. At this time, let us turn it over to the next speaker.
Please be seated. My title today is Keep Running. So I want an honest show of hands, and if you're watching at home, you can do this too. How many of you are tired? You're tired? Yeah, be honest. How many of you feel like you're getting a little weary sometimes? Yep. It's time to get on a new pair of running shoes, okay? We're in a race, and this is a race for our life. We're going to talk about that today. The first thing I want to show you is that if you looked outside here at Abel today, yesterday was 70 degrees. We were all running around in short sleeves. And today, when we woke up, we went outside, we looked out our window, whatever we did to see the outdoors, and there was a blanket of snow. Okay? When I saw it, I said, Yahweh is showing us this righteousness, this white, all over the campground, all over here at this great city of Yisrael, right? That's what it made me think of. Here, we're becoming white. We're becoming like snow. So I want to talk to you a little bit, because you got to get your running shoes on. You got to have a little incentive to stay in the race at this point, right? Because we're tired. The prophecies. I want you to write this down. The prophecies are so accurate. We're gonna show this right now. The prophecies are so accurate. I want you to write down Genesis 49:1, because it talks about a time period. And remember, in the Genesis 49, verse 1, remember it says, "Then Jacob called his sons, and he said, 'Gather together, so I might tell you what will befall you in the last days.'" So that's a time period. And in 2 Timaeus 3, 1 and 2, it says, "Know this," we're talking about this time period, "that in the last days," same time period, "perilous times will come. For men are going to be lovers of themselves, covetous, boasters, proud, blasphemers, disobedient to parents, unthankful, and unholy." Now let me know when you start seeing that in this world. It's already here, right? The last one in here is Micaiah 4:1. And it says, "But in the last days again, it's going to come to pass that the mountain or promotion of the house of Yahweh will be established in the chief of the nations." Our first speaker covered that so well. "It will be raised above all congregations, and all people will eventually flow to it." Like 2 billion. Like starting out with 1.2 million. Right? Do you see where this prophecy can definitely come to pass? That's giving us the incentive to stay in the race. Even though we're tired, we can see that these prophecies are coming to pass. Now, I don't even have time to talk about how the witnesses were born, chosen. Specific details were given about their lives in Isaiah 44, 1 and 2, Isaiah 49, Zechariah, chapters 4 and 5. You want to keep running? There's a little incentive. We know one of these witnesses. We are allowed and blessed enough to be sitting at his feet and learning directly from him all the time. No other generation, no other people could say that, but we can say that. We can boast a little bit about that. We're learning directly from the one that Yahweh has sent in these last days. That's amazing. Now, I want to talk about wars and specific things mentioned about these wars, okay? Give us a little incentive here. It tells us exactly where these wars are going to be. And you're going to see this on the screen. I want you to write down Revelation 9, verse 14. Revelation 9, verse 14, it says, "Saying to the last Moloch," we just talked about who that is, that last witness, right? "Saying to the last Moloch, which had the trumpet, loose the four angels who are bound in the great river Euphrates." So that gives us a place where these wars are going to be let loose, right? Everybody know where the great river Euphrates is? Okay, it's in a particular fourth part of the earth, right? And remember, it talks about that fourth part, that a third of the men will be killed in that fourth part. You divide the earth in quarters and you get that fourth part. It's so amazing that Yahweh, thousands of years ago, could allow men to be inspired to write about these things for our learning, and that we could be actually blessed enough to see this in our time period. I mean, who are we? Where were you before you came here? Nothing, right? Out there just blindly going and doing whatever, but Yahweh saw fit to choose you, to plunk you here in this race. Get your shoes on. Keep that incentive to stay in this race. Now, when are the wars going to be? Back to that same slide. When? Matithiah 24:7, and you can see that Yahweh's specific. He says, "For nation will rise against nation, nation against nation, kingdom or religion against religion, and there will be famines, pestilences, disease epidemics." We don't see any of those. Disease epidemics, right? Earthquakes, environmental disasters in place after place. They said you usually do not see tornadoes in the first Roman month. Did anyone watch the weather yesterday? Tornadoes in Dallas, and it's snowing here in Abel, right? It's crazy. Half of Australia's on fire. Anybody seen that? But there's really no natural disasters to speak of. You know, these prophecies, I don't know, right? Maybe one day in someone's lifetime, these things will all come to pass. No, it's in our lifetime. Get your running shoes on. Stay in the race. Do you see the incentive that we have here? Now we need to see why. Why? What's the point of staying in this race? Why? The earth also is defiled. Why are these things? Why are these wars? Why? Isaiah 24:5, it says, the earth also is defiled because of the inhabitants, because of the people. Because they've transgressed Yahweh's laws. They've changed his ordinances. They've broken his everlasting covenant. Yahweh made a deal with mankind, and mankind broke it. Plain. Simple. It's very easy to see. Revelation 6, verse 6. And I heard a voice in the midst of the four living creatures, the quartet. There is four people, four right now, just like the prophecies show, the four living creatures saying, a measure of wheat for a penny and three measures of barley for a penny. And see that you hurt not the oil. Donald Trump, and I quote, we're there to protect the oil. We're there to protect the oil. We're there to protect the oil. It matters not about the people. So now you see why these wars are taking place. So we know where, we know when, this time period, which is a generation. Generation is not a day. A generation, a time period, the end, it's a time period. It's not a day. And guess what? Get your running shoes on. You're in that time period right now. I want to show a few news articles that took place just this week. This is just this week. And Pastor said that, you know what? He didn't think it was going to be this Passover. He said he thinks it's going to be next. But these things can occur overnight. And I want to show you the escalation that we're seeing. Uproar and consequences mount for Trump after a Soleimani killing. Iran strikes back at U.S. with missile attack at bases, at U.S. bases in Iraq. Iran retaliates for General Soleimani killing by firing missiles at United States forces in Iraq. U.S.-Iran showdown. Who's been teaching us about this showdown? Who? Who? Anyone that's a pupil of Israel Hawkins knows that we learned about this showdown long before they ever started showing down. Okay? And then the last article on there is how close are we... Wait, let me finish that one. U.S.-Iran showdown has left some wondering, will we have World War III? And the last article, how close are we to World War III? The trending thing that was going around this week on the internet was World War III. Now, why would they be worried about that now? Could it be because they see all these things taking place? If your shoes are untied, little runners, I want you to get your shoes on. I want you to tie up your laces, and I want you to get in that race and keep that incentive to stay running. Run, 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 little flock. I want to show you a gematria. I put in a yamatria, a yamatria, and I put what's in store for 2020. Do you see this here? In the Greek, 2:14, to vociferate, that is to wail, to clang, tinkle, wail. Greek 16:13, to disturb wholly, exceedingly trouble. And it's from 1537 and 5015. And in the Greek 5015, for time's sake, I'm going to just read that. To stir, agitate, trouble. Get those shoes on. And 1264 means to stir, agitate, trouble. It all means bad stuff. War, dispute, fighting, strife. You got it up there on the screen. They're giving me the stop sign. But what I really want to tell you is read this magazine right here, right there. Read that. That's the first Roman month prophetic word magazine, and you're going to see it all right there. There's a time period. Our pastor, he writes so that we will read. So read, and he'll continue to write. So for all the end and the conclusion of all this is 2 Kefa 3:11. With all this going on, great house of Yahweh. What manner of person ought we to be in this race? Don't be dropping out of this race. Don't be getting tired. Don't be giving in. Don't kick your shoes off. Lay down and relax. It's time to keep running, because you're going to run yourself right into the kingdom if you keep on going, okay? Praise Yahweh. And with this, if everyone would please stand, I'd like to turn it over to the great priest in Yahweh's house.
Woo, ran all the way up here. Remember the golden oil, okay? And I just want to remind everybody about the House of Yahweh app. Please update your app, okay? Because it's just been renewed, so there's some changes and stuff made to it. So make sure you update the House of Yahweh app, okay? This time we get to hear from Great Deacon Stefania.
Praise Yahweh, thank you. Please be seated. I've been given a wonderful opportunity to speak with you today, and I would like to refresh your memory on the event that brought about the 1074 number. 1074 is the number that Yahweh gave his work in these last days. There are two works in these last days. 1074 is Yahweh's work. 666 is Satan's work. On 12-21, 2015, I was putting on the registration sticker on the windshield of Israel Suburban when I noticed the plate number on the sticker that they sent us did not match the number on the plate of the vehicle. The license plate number on the vehicle was 57HBC2. The number they sent him on the sticker was BJ58388. Well, we called the registration office and told them the problem, and they said that our tag number doesn't exist. Well, we went back and forth with them and with Israel trying to get this straightened out, and they finally made us purchase another license plate. That's when we received the 1074 number. Well, as it turned out, Yahweh caused all this trouble. Now, I know that sounds controversial, Yahweh caused the trouble, but he made it very memorable. For the reason that Israel's attention was drawn to the number, he says there's got to be something special about this number. I wonder what that number means. And he went in the house, he came out. As I was putting on the plate, he went in the house, came out, and started reading me this number. And he said, Yahweh wants us to have this number. That's how it started. And there's been so much brought out in the Amatri proving this work is 1074, it's undeniable. Turn to 1 Kefa 1, verse 3, please. 1 Kefa, chapter 1, verse 3. Blessed be Yahweh, the Father of our King Yahshua Messiah, who according to his abundant mercy has begotten us again to a living hope through the resurrection of Yahshua Messiah from the dead. Now skip down to verse 5. It says, who are kept by the power of Yahweh through the faith for salvation, ready to be revealed at the end time. Now I want to focus right there. For salvation, ready to be revealed at the end time. This end time salvation has been given the number 1074. It's been cut off for a while. It's been returned to us. It's offered to us. 666 number has never been cut off. It's always been there. But that number wasn't revealed until Israel brought it out in the Mark of the Beast book written in the 70s. Now I asked Israel, when was salvation offered to the world again after it had been cut off? And I thought he would tell us at his birth, at his baptism, at the reestablishment of the house of Yahweh. But he said 1962, when he started their radio broadcast together. And that's an easy date for me to remember because that was the year I was born. Put away the calculators, I'm 57 years old. Israel was 28 years old when he started that radio broadcast, and that's one of his lot numbers. So salvation wasn't reoffered to the world when Israel was born. It was offered when I was born, when the two witnesses started to their broadcast together on the radio. Deuteronomy 30, verse 15 says, "See, I have set before you this day life by righteousness, 1074, and death and destruction, 666. The key word there is and. You got righteousness and death. Two works. Choose life. And I got, before I go, I want to share one thing with you. If you take 1074 and you add 66 to it, you get 1740. That's 1074 screwed up. You got all the numbers there, but it's screwed up. So if you look up 1740 in the Hebrew, it means to cleanse. I thought that was awesome. Now, you can't add to it, so I don't think we should take away from it, but if you did, you'd get 408, which means you have nothing. I thought that was awesome. Anyway, if you'll please stand, I'd like to introduce the great deacon, Michael Ossoff.
Shabbat shalom, great saints of Yahweh. Please be seated. Peace of Yahweh be with each and every one of you. We're going to move rather quickly. A lot of stuff has taken place this week in the news and prophecy. The killing of the Iranian commander, the Iranian general, which was a huge birth pain. And if you noticed, they killed the general, and it was everything was tense. The oil prices went up. The stock market started freaking out. Then they retaliated. Iran shot missiles back, and then it stopped. And they said Iran standing down, and so is the United States. The oil prices dropped. The stock market settled. Huge birth pain. So we're going to get into that. But one thing I want to point out is the Yahmetria and the Bible codes. Make no mistake, Yahweh, these things originated with Yahweh. They did not come from Babylon. They did not come from Greece. After talking with pastor and a few priests, the gods repeatedly took things that Yahweh created for the benefit of his house and mankind and corrupted it, twisted it to their own destruction, and trying to find ways to destroy mankind and Yahweh's plan. Remember, Genesis 1:1, in the beginning, Yahweh created the heavens and the earth and all therein. And in Yochanan 1:1-5, all things were done according to the plan. And the plan was for mankind to be able to have salvation and have a way to bring peace and a way for his house to bring peace to all the earth and universe. Remember that. These things originated with Yahweh, and the gods took them and corrupted them. Now we're going to watch a quick video, and this shows the validity of the codes. Now remember, it wasn't until the last days with the invention of the computer were they really able to dig into it. So if this time, could we go ahead and play the Bible codes clip?
Rabbi Weissmandel, through his diligence and determination in his studies of the Torah, made some remarkable discoveries. The word Torah in Hebrew consists of four letters, a Tau, a Vav, a Resh, and a He, which are equivalent for us to talk about it as if it was a T, an O, an R, and an H. We should note here that the Hebrew alphabet consists of 22 letters that are essentially consonants. Vowels are generally simply inferred. The Vav operates sort of what we would consider as an O, but it's not considered a vowel. In the book of Genesis, if you go to the first equivalent of a T and count 49 letters and then take the next one, in other words, the 50th letter, is the equivalent of what we would consider a vav. It's what we would consider an O. You count another 50 letters, it's a resh, or like our R. You count another 50 letters, and you come to a hey, or like an H. In other words, it's as if you found a T-O-R-H at 49-letter intervals. It spells the word Torah. Rather remarkable in its own right, but one of those things you could dismiss as just a happenstance. But when you get to Exodus, you discover the same thing happens. You come to a T, 49 letters plus 1, you get to the O, the R, and the H the same way. And so again, this starts to look very designed. In fact, it's rather interesting that this number 50 are the number of days from the Exodus to the giving of the Torah at Mount Sinai. In pursuing this further, you go to the book of Leviticus, the third book, and there's nothing like this happens. But you go to the fourth book of the Torah, the book of Numbers, the same thing happens, but only if you spell Torah backwards. Kind of weird. You go to the book of Deuteronomy, again you find the equivalent thing, but only if you spell it backwards. Now, you wonder, what does this mean? And you stand back from it all. It's as if those four books are pointing to the middle book, two forward, two back, to the book of Leviticus. So you examine Leviticus more carefully and discover not 49 letter intervals, but 7 letter intervals.
Every eighth letter,
you have the word Yahweh, or the name of God. And you stand back from this whole thing and you realize the Torah is always pointing to the name of God. Rabbi Weissmandel's discovery is the first modern hint of hidden codes in the Bible, and of course has led to using computer to find others. Professor Daniel Michelson at UCLA has estimated that the probability of Weissmandel's discovery happening by accident is less than 1 in 3 million.
Praise Yahweh. So make no mistake, it's not the name of God. It's the name of our Heavenly Father, Great Father Yahweh. So let's get into the search. The search is called Soleimani, Iranian commander or general. So we're going to jump right into this. This, I had to go back a couple times because some other things was brought to my attention. So here we go. Okay, so we have, right here, we have his name, Soleimani, and it came up one time. Okay, and I'm going to go rather quickly. This was all right in a row. This word here was killed. It crosses his name. This word here says Iraq. Killed in Iraq. Okay. Then we have right here, 2020. Missile. Then we have anger and great rage, which is what the Iranians had developed over that. Okay? And then we have over here, we have war. Fire, great noise. Over here. Then we have Trump. Trump's name came up right there. All right? Violence. Violence is right here. Then this word came up right here, and it's the word beginning, and it crosses 2020, so that shows it was in the beginning of 2020. Then right here we have Euphrates River, Euphrates, and it crosses right here, Euphrates River. Oh, I'm sorry, Euphrates River. Then over here, we have retaliation, which is what Iran did. They retaliated against the United States. Now it gets interesting. And this is what I had to come back and check. I'm just going to read these in a row. You got 15, 16, 17, 18, and 19. And what it is gestation, pregnancy, baby, birth pain. Now remember, they said this. Stand down. Obviously a birth pain because it took place, it was incredibly intense, then it just stopped. And there was like great calm, just like a birth pain. And Trump even said, the Iranians are standing down, and so is the United States. Now, one thing I wanted to point out real quick to close out my speech is the normal gestation of a woman is 37 weeks to 42 weeks. It used to be the average was 40 weeks, but they said it's dropped over the years, and in 2015, they said it was down to 39 weeks, but it averages from 37 to 42 weeks, which is 259 days to 293 days. From 1-2-2020, when the general was killed, to the anniversary of the signing of the 7-year peace treaty, 927, is 269 days or 38 weeks. Something to think about. Watch for more birth pains. And I highly recommend you pull your nuclear baby books out and start reviewing, because you never know, around the anniversary of the signing of the peace treaty, we might have a birth and it just might be a boy. So with that, if you'll all please stand. I have the great honor and privilege to turn it over to a great priest in Yahweh's house, the great Kohen Yehuda Hawkins.
Shalom. Please be seated. We got to do a few seconds of preparation here. If you will, please take your book of Yahweh and turn to page 591. We're going to look at Jeremiah chapter 23, verse 6. If you have a Bible, it's Jeremiah 23, verse 6. And we're going to have some stuff on the screen here in a minute. I just want to read the scripture first. In his days, Yada will be saved. And Israel will dwell safely. And this is the name that he will proclaim to them: Yahweh Zakanu, Yahweh our righteousness. Okay, if you will, put on one and look at it. This is two different Hebrew dictionaries. So the word Yada that is written in Jeremiah 23, verse 6 is translated from the Hebrew word Yada, Yod He Waw Dalet He. A Hebrew and English lexicon of the Old Testament by Brown, Driver, and Briggs, page 397, and Hebrew and English lexicon by William Higgs Barker on page 39 shows this word means, I will praise Yahweh, confess praise, give thanks, companies who give thanks, a confessor or worshiper of Yahweh. And there it is. If you look, it's right there. The top one is Brown, Driver, and Briggs, and the bottom one is Hebrew and English lexicon by William Higgs Barker. Now, he wrote this book way back around the 17th or 18th century. Okay, the next word, the word Israel that is written in Jeremiah 23, verse 6, is translated from the Hebrew word Yisrael. This word is listed on page 622 of a Hebrew and Chaldee lexicon to the Old Testament by Julius First, which shows this word emphatically means, and put up number two, the true, pious, faithful Israel, and so a title of honor for the select of the people. You are the select, better known as the called out ones. The last word is the word proclaimed that is written in Jeremiah 23, verse 6, is translated from the Hebrew word yakaru. This word is listed on pages 1409 and 1418 of volume 2 of the Hebrew Aramaic English Dictionary by Marcus Jasper, which shows this word means to call, to teach, and able. So this is what Jeremiah 23, verse 6 is saying. In his days, those who reverence Yahweh, remember it says worshiper of Yahweh in number one that we showed. Those who reverence Yahweh, those who worship Yahweh will be saved. And Israel, the select, the faithful, the select of the people, a title of honor for the select of the people. That's Israel. And the called ones will dwell safely, and this is the name that he will proclaim to them at Abel. Through whom? Exactly. Yahweh Zadkanu, Yahweh our righteousness. When it says, those who reverence well will be saved, put this in your notes, Yahshua, the book of Yahshua, or Joshua in the King James Version, 24 verse 15. It says, Israel is the called out ones, and it says, those who reverence Yahweh or worship Yahweh or Yada. Yahshua the son of Nun said in Yahshua 24 verse 15 or Joshua 24 15, as for me and my house, we will serve Yahweh. The word Israel. Remember, a select. For the select, an honor of the select of the people. Are you not the selected ones? You are the called out ones. 1 Timothy 3:15, the word says, the house of Yahweh are the called out ones, the pillar and ground of the truth. And all of that is in this little short verse. All of that. And it said, all these things will occur at Abel. All these teachings and proclamations led by the one sent. May Yahweh bless your understanding. Please be thankful and glad and think of these scriptures. 1 Timothy 3:15, Yahshua the son of Nun 24:15. And remember, Yada means those who reverence Yahweh, and Israel means the select, the chosen ones, the called out ones of the house of Yahweh, the pillar and ground of the truth. You shall know the truth, Yahshua said, and this truth will set you free from even death. May Yahweh bless your understanding, and I turn the service over to the great Kohan, Ilya Hawkins.
Shabbat shalom, everyone. Please be seated. The peace of Yahweh be with each and every one of you. Starting out, what's coming out in the news, and I'm sure there's much more to come about this. Jupiter can grab comets and asteroids and fling them at the Earth, study says. And of course, it's saying that the biggest planet in the solar system might be a bully, not a protector, as previously behaved. So, or believed. It also says it behaved that way. So I'm sure there's much more to come on that, but just keep that in your mind with Jupiter. But then looking in and around the great river Euphrates has been talked about this morning, and keep this in your mind. The news today contains a lot of what's going on today, but some history, because many people don't understand the buildup to what's going on. And for example, one person said, and I've seen this on a major news channel, where someone said, "Do you really think killing a general would start a world war?" Research World War I. Yes, there was a general killed. His name was Franz Ferdinand was his name. And, of course, him and his wife Sophie were killed, and it started a change of events that led to World War I. So is it possible? We've already seen it take place. But, of course, this isn't just something that has just started recently. This has been going on for a while, and I want you to notice the date where it talks about the Shah. If you're not familiar with the Shah being removed from Iran in 1979, I want you to remember 1979, but it's very important to remember this book, The Mark of the Beast, Volume 1, was written in 1976. Before these things started, before you see them going into play, Pastor wrote about them. He spoke about them. He showed these things taking place. But before we get to Iran, of course, Turkey and Russia, the Turk pipeline, that's called Turk Stream, that's that natural gas pipeline that Russia ran through the Black Sea into Turkey. They plan on expanding it into Europe, and there's two other countries also involved in this. And this is the one the United States, they wanted to sanction. They wanted it to stop, but President Putin comes out and says, "We have proven when two countries work together, we can overcome the international aggressor," speaking of the United States. And this, of course, is no petrodollar involved in this. There won't be any money for the United States in this. And that's what bothers the United States. There's no money. There's no revenue. No one's paying tribute to this system, to the system that they want to rule this world, to govern this world. And it's shown through sanctions. Now, that if you remember the Nord Stream pipeline, that's the one running from Russia to Germany. It's actually paused right now due to sanctions. And you'll see the term sanction, and this is given in there for the information for you to understand. A sanction is supposed to be technically an order that's taken against another country to make it obey international law. So it's supposed to make it obey international law. Now, this is very interesting. The United States, if they put a sanction on a country and you break that sanction, they can fine you of up to $1 million as a person and 20 years in prison. And it doesn't matter what citizen you are of what country. That shows the power where they can inflict this pressure on you, because if they can't get to you, they'll pressure their allies to get to you. This is this economic pressure where you will not buy, sell, nor trade unless you come underneath the authority of this beast. And that's what they're showing. Russia trying to stand against this, with China and other countries building their team, so to speak. Of course, you also had a Russian destroyer that came into very close contact with a U.S. destroyer, and this was over in the Middle East, and they show that. And this is just acts of aggression. It's like being out in the playground and people are pushing on each other, showing that you want to punch me, I'll punch you back. You want to bully me, I'll bully you back. Russia is very clearly saying, we're not Iraq, we're not Iran, we'll punch back. We don't want to, but we will. And that's what they're showing. And Iran is saying, yeah, if they punch, we'll punch too. Because they need someone to help them, because they've been choked down for so many years. And then you're going to see these sanctions. Remember these sanctions, that's an order against them, trying to get them to comply with international law, or as the United States sees this law fit, this beastly system consisting of the Catholic Church, bringing them under this Christianity. It says U.S. sanctions on Iran. They have more sanctions on Iran than North Korea, Cuba, Venezuela, and Libya combined. Think of the social pressure, and the reason to put these sanctions on the country is to degrade the people economically so much that everyday life is put to where you have to scrape, you have to scream, you have to beg, and you start looking at your leaders and saying, why are you doing this? And they're trying to bring forth an overthrow of government or an overthrow of leadership, and that's what these sanctions are doing. Well, with China and Russia helping with the oil sales in Iran, there's just enough trickling through to keep the pressure down, to keep them from coming against the leadership as strongly as they would have without that help. So watch all these things as they're taking place, because once again, in 1979, the United States used, of course, these nuclear reasons when the Shah was removed from office and the Ayatollah, and that's a religious leader, he took over. Now, the Shah was a friend of the United States, and the Shah actually helped with the oil. Iran was considered a friend as long as the oil money was rolling in. But as soon as that quit rolling in, they became an enemy. So think about that. It doesn't take much to see the reasons why these were taking place. These things are taking place. Then you have the assassination of General Qasem Soleimani. Now, that's the general that was, as they're saying, assassinated. Even the United States say assassinated. President Trump used a couple terms. He just said no more, gone, and some other few terms. But this assassination, it wasn't just Soleimani that was assassinated. There was other people with him, also an Iraqi leader. But watch where they describe if someone was to assassinate someone in the United States of the same stature. They compare it with the director of the CIA, and some even said the Secretary of State. Imagine what would occur if the United States, if a leader was assassinated in the United States, what would occur? Now, many countries are saying, keep this in mind because of sanctions, many countries are saying, including Russia and China, and of course Iran, are saying that this act of this assassination was against international law. Now, by rule, the United States should have sanctions put against it. The United States is the beast that issues the sanctions. You can't buy, sell, nor trade, so these sanctions won't be of any benefit. The only way they can escape this beastly system is to create their own system. That's what they're doing with that BRICS banking system. But, of course, you have this violation of international law, and then Trump calls for NATO. It's very important to watch what he says when he gave his remarks at the White House. He talks about how everyone is safe, all American citizens are safe, because the retaliation from Iran of the missiles launched a few days later into Iraq only destroyed equipment. No lives were lost. And he says that we're all safe. And then he makes a call for NATO to join in this war in the Middle East. Well, this war in the Middle East, of course, NATO, remember, is the Pope's army. Pastor has brought that for years. You're calling in this massive army. Why would the United States, that spends trillions of dollars, need 28 other countries to come in and join in? Because you're seeing a battle build up. Remember, China, Russia, and Iran just held drills. And when they show the map, you're going to show how countries are picking teams. You either pick the United States or you pick Russia and China. But you got to pick one or the other. You can't walk the fence line. You see the buildup for a huge war. Billions of dollars being spent for training, for this drumming up so they can get the advantage. And this is something to remember. If you haven't got this, please get it. This last newsletter, Pastor's written all these things before these things took place, by the way. This newsletter came out before the heat got hotter over in Iran. But it talks about a third of men murdered in that fourth part of the earth around the great river Euphrates. And then there's a map in there that shows you that fourth part of the earth. When you see, as I call it, team making, those that are joining themselves with Russia and China, look to see where every one of those countries are at that's looking to join military forces to combat the United States, or as Iran says, the great devil. They're all in that fourth part of the earth, in and around the great river Euphrates, and they're all saying, hurt not the oil. Remember what the United States is doing to Syria. Now, President Trump said in his announcement there at the White House that the United States did not need Middle Eastern oil anymore. Then why are we controlling Syrian oil and threatening to shoot anyone that tries to take it? Why are we doing such a thing? Of course, it has to do with money, and it has to do with this control, this rulership. And anyone that doesn't come underneath this rulership will die. And one thing I want to show you before we play the news, Pastor also wrote this in 1976. He put it out, published in 1985, but it's called The Way of Escape. Remember, he wrote this before it ever started. He gave the way out. And it says, Yahweh loves those who turn to him and call upon his name for their protection. Yahweh shows us a time of trouble such as never was before. This time of trouble is the great tribulations. It is shown as a time to be of severe pressure on all life, but especially severe on the believers of the house of Yahweh. Yahweh has shown us the prophecy, and Yahweh has also shown us the way of escape. Now, I would encourage everyone to read that because it takes place through obedience. Obedience to the one sent and the keeping of Yahweh's laws. At this time, if we could please play the news. The greatest teacher in the world, the great Kahan Yisrael, Abel Hawkins.
Praise Yahweh, praise Yahweh, praise Yahweh. Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. Praise Yahweh. These Yahweh says you can be seated. It's a beautiful white Sabbath. You just think about it now. Next month, may the peace of Yahweh be with each and every one of you. The peace of Yahweh be with each and every one of you. If you just think about it next week, next month, which is not too far off, the Martins will be here. They get here just before the feast. That's the purple Martins. next month, we're facing. I think I'm going to show you. No, let me start here. Let me start here with all this dominance that they're wanting. Now, you saw that last part, and you heard what he was saying, the pipeline, you know, between Russia and Turkey, that weans out the United States. And, of course, I said it long before they did, and Revelations said it in 96. They said it in 96 AY, hurt not the oil. Now that's what the fight starts over. That's what Revelation 6 and 9 shows you. And of course, this is what we're seeing now is the great conflict. The great conflict. You just saw it there on television. Don't forget that on the news. That's what the man says. Kremlin backs top general assessment that NATO is drilling for large-scale war. NATO, the Pope's army, they're drilling oil. They're drilling for it. This guy's been reading our literature. They're drilling for, not for peace, but for large-scale war. That's the headlines on this document right here. That's what you just saw, but this just makes it stronger. The Kremlin has said that it thrust the opinion of a It trusts the opinion of a senior Russian general who has said that NATO, the Pope's army, intensified drilling this year are an indication that the military bloc, is preparing for major conflict. They're not preparing for peace now, it's major conflict. Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov said that the opinion was based on analysts of data collected by the Russian military and should not be dismissed. Gerasimov said the increased number and scale of military exercises conducted by NATO members this year indicates that the alliance is purposively training its troops to be engaged in a major military conflict. NATO, here's another one now, with Trump involved, NATO and me. that me is of course, Trump, but it also includes Middle East. It's the two, shaking hands, NATO and me, Trump. Now, all the rest of you out of here, out of this land, we're going to straighten this out ourselves, and we're going to take over the land. NATO and me, Trump and the Middle East. The president's suggestion came one day after he issued a vague call for more NATO involvement in the Middle East. Trump discussed his phone call the day before with NATO Secretary General Jean Schlossenberg, whom Trump described as excited about the prospect of a Middle East expansion. Middle East expansion. Now, this includes Israel, of course, and this is part of the objection to what is taking place here, which fits in with the war, with the oil, of course, that's in this expanded land that they're wanting. And we can come home. A North Atlantic military alliance should take over the U.S. in the region because this is an international problem. Now, Dunn said it's me and NATO, but now they're wanting NATO to take over. They're trying to make out like NATO is the one that can do it all. Well, they can't. They have got to have the assistance of the United States. And we can come home, he said, that speaking of our soldiers in Iraq, are largely come home and use NATO, he continued, portraying such a move as a trade-off for Washington's leading role in eliminating the Islamic State. That's what it says, in eliminating the Islamic State's physical dominion. Sound like a bomb blast, didn't it? He spoke with Schlossenberg later in the day and emphasized the value of NATO, increasing its role in preventing conflict, that sounds great, preserving peace, that sounds great, in the Middle East, according to the White House. According to a NATO readout of the conversation, Schlossenberg and Trump agreed that NATO could contribute more to regional stability, that sounds great, and the fight against international terrorism, which includes, of course, war with the ones they're wanting to eliminate. NATO, right, and then you see you have me, Middle East. He told the reporters exactly, writing it in the air with his finger, you call it NATO-me. What a beautiful name. I'm good at names. The Pope's army and me. Trump and the Middle East. I don't know what I'm doing here. Now, don't forget this. Netanyahu calls for a unity government, a unity government. They know they need unity. Well, he calls for a unity government that would annex Jordan Valley. He wants unity to annex the Jordan Valley. Well, of course, that was voted down, and he lost that proposal quickly. That is what the world is doing. The world is getting ready for nuclear war. The Christians are getting ready for to worship the goddess Easter, and they worship the rabbits too. Rabbits lay colored eggs on that day. Christians, their whole religion is based on lies. Christmas, Santa Claus coming down the chimney, Easter, rabbits laying eggs, and then they worship the dead to get their advice and their ideas to take the land and do what they want to do with it. If everybody would write this down, it's in radio land, and if you preachers, now I know I've argued with you for 50 years or more, so I know if I started it with you again, I know your answers. Well, it was beginning to dawn towards the first day of the week when Mary came to the grave. If you have a Webster's Dictionary, if you don't get you one, go to the library, look it up. Look up the word dawn. This will help you a great deal because you're thinking that dawn is sunup, when the sun starts coming up. Now, Webster's Dictionary will tell you it's not. In Genesis 2, 1 through 3, Yahweh set the days. 1 through 7, he blessed the Sabbath day. The Sabbath, the weekly Sabbath, is only one Sabbath. Leviticus 23 shows it among the feast days. It's a feast day. It's an appointed, everlasting feast day, Isaiah 66. It and the new moons, it's everlasting. It will never change. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. 7 is the day Yahweh rested and blessed. There won't be another one. There can't be another one. It was the Catholic Church whose numbers, if you look up Jupiter and you look up where all the trouble's coming from, and you look up Cain, the Catholic Church, you will find they have both the same number. Now, isn't that strange? Now, this will be told in detail, but get this in your mind. This is where all this lies came from Satan through Cain. Through Cain, that was her preacher, her priest, the first Catholic God worshiper. Catholic means God worship. It means universal, universal, which includes and came from Jupiter, the universe. They worship all the gods in the universe. Cain was the first Catholic. That's the reason Yeshua said, from the blood of Abel who came killed, it's going to be up on your heads in this generation. In this generation, all the way back to Cain who killed Abel. Let me read you what the dictionary shows. By the way, that's Genesis to finish what the Sabbath is. The Sabbath begins at sunset. The Sabbath, it dawns towards the sunset. The day is dawning towards the sunset. The evening and the morning, that's Genesis 3 and verse 5. The evening and the morning. The night comes first, and then the day. Now, that's all you have to get from me, and you should be able to figure it out from there. Mary, or Miriam, came to the grave as it was dawning towards the first day of the week. What time of the day was this? If you look at the Webster's Dictionary, look up the word dawn. Now, of course it has sun rising. That's what the Christians put in there. They wanted you to believe that's what that word means. But it doesn't. It doesn't mean that. Never has from the beginning. But listen to the second one. To begin to appear. It means to begin. That word dawn, it means to begin to appear or to develop. The first day of the week, as it began to dawn towards the first day of the week, was the appearance going down of the sun on the Sabbath day. Yes, he rose on the Sabbath day. Yeshua was brought to life on the Sabbath day. As it was beginning to dawn towards the first day of the week, as the sun was going down, which ends the Sabbath. From evening unto evening, you shall celebrate my Sabbath. Not from morning to morning, it's evening till evening. And surely you can understand that. That's so simple. Now listen to the next one. To begin, to be perceived or understand the truth finally. That's actually in Webster's Dictionary. Here it is. Now, you can begin to see where you're wrong. They didn't come there as the sun was rising. They came there at the end of the Sabbath. As it was beginning to be perceived or understood that the Sabbath was ending and the first day was beginning at evening, sundown on the Sabbath. Now that's all I'm going to bring you, but if you've got questions, I'll be glad to answer them. But you can study this for yourself after this. Now, unity. Here's our unity, and this is what Yeshua meant when he said in Matthew 16, verse 18, I think. He said, I'm going to build my house. He is talking about the prophecy, Micaiah 4, 1 through 4, Isaiah 2, 2, where Yahweh said, in the last days, I will build my house. In the last days now, in the last days. Let me see if I got something. Let's see. We can go on without it. I'll find it later. In the last days, I will establish my house. And, of course, that's a time period, as I'll show you, like the word generation, and the particular word that Yeshua used, because he used a special word for this word generation. And but the unity, he says, it will be on unity. Let me read that to you. Micaiah, you can remember that, but look at Revelation 16. Remember Micaiah, he says, in the last days I will establish my house. That was Yahweh. Well, Yeshua calls it his house too. And then he said in the other scriptures that the branch will actually establish the house. But it's done through Yeshua and Yahweh. Yahweh being the first, always. In Genesis, Matithiah 16 and verse 18, he says, I also say to you, he is speaking to Kepha, who are Kepha, whose name means rock. Rock. That rock, Yahweh is our rock. That upon this rock, Yahweh unity, that's what it means. Yahweh unity. I will build this house, family, the house of Yahweh, and the gates of Sheol, the grave, will not, that's death, means death and burial, put you away, turn you back to dust. No, that's not going to be this time. Will not prevail against it this time. The unity that is coming, it's already started. Micah, Micaiah 4, verses 1 through 3, in the last days I will establish my house. They'll preach this message of the kingdom to all the world, then the end will come. That's the Savior's words in Matthew 24, talking about the same time. It started off really, really small. I can't remember exactly how many days, how small, how many people were sitting on the patio when, at the homestead, when Jacob and I dedicated the work here in Abilene, where Yahweh brought me in 1967. This right here, if you'll show that right there. Can you see it? No. Yeah, it's right. Over 1 million viewers watched you women last week bring the message, and one man, I reached over to shut his mouth here. He says, he writes this beautiful email. Maybe I could read it. Let's see. Is that a child talking about Yahweh? Awesome, he says. Or she, I don't know if it was a man or a woman. I don't want to tell. Let's see. We love the house of Yahweh. We love our children. Yes, that is very obvious. Do what Yahweh tells you, and I'll love you forever. That's our children. That's all my children. Some of them are your children, but they're my children too. let's see. Shabbat Shalom, family of Yahweh, from the city of Israel. So the word is going out. The city of Israel, Texas. Let's see. Sabbath Shalom, great kings and queens of Yahweh. And here's one I like too. I'm just skipping through here to get them. But it says, Shabbat Shalom, royal servants of Yahweh. Well, praise Yahweh. But did you see that number? Over 1 million viewers. Now, they did some kind of special for us, I was told this week, and they don't normally do it, but they said, that's not all. They said 1 million watched it all the way through. Over 1 million watched it all the way through. But the ones that tuned in late were not part of that million. But the ones that tuned in late but watched some of it, probably the most of it, hopefully, they were up into millions, like 4 and 5 million. The list of nations, if you can see how small this is, I mean, there's a lot on each page. There's 7 pages here, nations that this came from. Well, that is all done in unity. It's all done in great unity. There's no conflict in the house of Yahweh. We're bringing forth the laws from the smallest child that wants to teach, and they have to want to teach, or we wouldn't let them be up here on the stage. Shalom. It's with great comfort to have this knowledge, and this comes from a place overseas I better not say, but there's a lot of people that's trying to get their visas right now, I understand, to get here. Well, the end. Now, the unity, Micaiah 4, and then Matthias 16, that's unity. I brought out, mentioned it, the 6,000-year period that was given to mankind. And, well, we're over 6,000 years. You know, you add up 4,004 and 2019, and you get a different number. But you get 6,023. A lot of things have to go into this sermon, and I don't know when I'll get to it, but I will get to the whole thing eventually. But if you'll just take this down right here, you'll see where I'm coming from. And I ended with that, if you remember. I ended with that, and I can't go into it right now because we've got to get ready for the end. I got to get you ready for the end. I got to get myself ready for it. I feel like I'm running behind, and I don't like that. But anyway, this end, you get 6,023. Well, it doesn't start with the 4,004. That was the beginning. Eve had Cain, and then she had Abel. And, of course, these two were taught by their parents, the two priests. It says nothing about Adam being a priest. The priest Abel, righteous Abel, whose blood was shed by evil, God-worshipping Cain, following gods, that the evil gods. I know that most preachers miss that in Genesis 3, verse 5, where it says that Satan denied what Yahweh said. Remember, Yeshua said Satan was a liar. She was the beginning of lying, the beginning of liars. She can't tell the truth. She can't bring forth the truth. Well, she convinced Eve to sin, and the mother convinced Cain to sin. Adam seemed to be keeping Abel pretty straight, and Abel became a righteous priest of Yahweh, and Cain became an unrighteous priest. Now, where Cain went wrong was he saw Abel exceeding him, his younger brother exceeding him, and he became very angry. They could have worked together. Both of them could have worked together. But it didn't occur that way. And if you start thinking how it could have occurred, you can come up with all kinds of things. But it has to be unity to bring forth unity. It has to be unity on the mother's side as well as on the father's side. It has to be unity. You can't defend a child when he wants to act like an idiot and blame his father. Now, this was what was taking place with Cain. You can teach the child. You can teach the child. That's what we're told to do. Teach our children diligently. It's still up to them, of course, to make the choice. But you can always have your voice ringing in their head that what you told them earlier they should have done. You can't keep them from going out and making mistakes. Well, this is what occurred with these two boys. But they were taught. How long were they taught? It doesn't say, except here a little and there a little. And you get a little of this in Genesis, then you get another little of it in another place and another little in another place. This, in 2019, we have three and a half years left there of a 26-year period. Now, where did I get that? June 6th, 2019, they failed to sign a peace treaty, a peace agreement, a waiver of the peace agreement. They failed to sign it. This peace agreement was signed September 13, 1993. September 13, 1993. It stayed in operation 3.5 years, meaning after it was shut down, we had 3.5 years to go. They failed to sign it. They had to sign it by June 6, 2019. Otherwise, it would have begun as it was signed September 13, 1993, and started October 13, 1993. Now, that's 3 or 3.5 years. If you look at 6,023 and add 3 years to it. You got that? The two numbers, 4,004 add 4,004 and then add to 2019. 2019 is when they failed to sign it. Now, from that date, you would have 3 or 3.5 years cut short. 3 years. You see what it brings it to? That would be 6,026. Now, if you take the time that Yahshua was born, it wasn't when he was born that makes the difference, but when he started preaching. Because when he started preaching tells you how old Abel was when Yahweh allowed him to start being a priest. If you look at as a first Abel and a last Abel, well, 26 A.Y., Yahshua was baptized by Yochanan. If you write this down, you can explain it later. 26 A.Y. is when Yahshua was baptized by Yochanan. That is Matthew 3:13. I'm going to turn over there. I don't want to slip up here. I'll be explaining the rest of my life if I do. 3:13. If you'll look at the top of your chapter 3 there, it says 26 A.Y. He was 26 years old. So by this now, Abel being the first Abel, Yeshua being the last Abel, see, Abel would be starting his preaching at 26 years old. In 3 and verse 13, he says, then Yeshua came from Galilee to the Jordan to Yochanan to be baptized by him, be baptized by Yochanan. He was sent out to be tempted. This was 27 A.Y. He had just been baptized now, and they started, and he went out to be tempted, taken into temptation. Has anyone ever been tempted to go out and make money? Has anybody ever been tempted with holding a worldly office? I remember when I was friends in Abilene, I thought they were friends, but I remember I knew all the bankers, all the judges, all the lawyers. In fact, they came over. That's Dr. Tull, by the way. I told you I couldn't remember his name. I had doctors, lawyers. Yes, they came to my house to visit. And they were wanting me to get involved in politics. And I was an upcoming businessman. And doing very well, and all the bankers told them that. And I could do a great deal for this community. Just get me in politics. Well, I wasn't interested in that. I wasn't interested in making a bunch of money either. I was interested in doing the work of Yahweh. Well, he was tempted. Yeshua was tempted. Turned it all down. Said, I don't want any part of it. Worldly riches, fame, everything went with it there in the next 6 verses. Now in that same year, 27, he opened his mouth and taught. Verse 2, he opened his mouth and taught. He taught before that. It's like Jacob and I when his name was J.G., we were in college, and I told you this before, we sent out letters to the churches and got more than we could handle, but we would go there on the Sabbath day and teach again on Sunday for those who came on Sunday. And the churches, Yahweh was more or less experiencing us, training us. Well, we didn't like it. After we got out of college, we decided to come back this way. Decided? No, we were led. And I didn't know that then, but I know it now. And we were led to Nimrod, of all places, to a community building named Ramya, not too far from here. And I think it's on Highway 183. I think that's right. And we pastored that community building, and there's where we agreed, along with several others now, that we had about seven or eight families. No, not that many. Maybe three or four families. Wasn't very many. But we brought up the name Yahweh. And I said, of course, we had a pile of proof at that time, not nearly as much as we do now, that his name was Yahweh. Everybody, all the dictionaries and everything now is putting his name in their dictionaries and saying, yeah, this is the name of the Creator. Well, I said, we know the name is Yahweh. Why aren't we using the name Yahweh? Well, everybody agreed we should. I said, why don't we? Why don't we just do it? Mark God and Lord out of our memories. So that was the time that also in that building that Jacob and I baptized each other. We'd already been baptized, but it was Lord and God. So we baptized each other in the name of Yahweh. Through Yahshua, our high priest. I do believe that was 61. It might have been 62. In 61, I know I was 26 years old. I know I was 26 years old when we baptized each other. And then we started preaching on the world, on the radio. And that's where a lot of people heard from that radio in Eastland. And they came to the house of Yahweh then when it was established in Abilene. There's three nurses, I remember, in that bunch. And some people from Dice Army, there's Air Force Base, they were in the Air Force, but there were several people. We came to, at that time, when this was taking place, Jacob came down and we dedicated the work here in Abilene. But before that, we started preaching on the radio, reaching out to the people, and it was blessed. Our work was blessed by Yahweh, and people heard that. They let it be known that that's the reason they came to Abilene when we built the building there, and they heard about it. But I know I was 26 years old. If Adam was 26 years old, not Adam, if Abel, he was Yahweh's righteous priest, he was 26 years old. There's a bunch more than this goes with this scripture, but he was 26 years old. Add 26 there, and you got it. Instead of 23, put 26, and you got it. You got 6,000 years that brings you through the 3.5 years of great tribulation that's going to be cut short. I don't know how short it will be cut, but I know it will be cut short. I didn't get into the sermon. I was trying to straighten that out for the ones who is in question. This will start you off. It's not nearly all of it, but it'll start you on that, if you want to continue the subject. I want to take this opportunity to tell you that there's no way that a person on their own could understand these scriptures. You've got to have help. You can't do it without help. First off, it takes a long time to get the hearers and the littles. Here are littles and there are littles. It takes a long time to get the book of Yahweh in your head. And that's got to be done. To do it, it would take you 50 or 60 years, probably. With hard study and teaching, it will take you at least 26 years. You don't have that much time. The Book of Yisrael, if you want to run that through the gematria, you'll find my date of birth and tag numbers. The Book of Yisrael. One of the elders, the great Kohan Shaul, and his team of workers at the press room started this Book of Yisrael, putting together my sermons and writings. But that book is necessary. It puts together for you the here a littles and there a littles, which are thousands, brethren. And you can't just read the Bible, or you can't just read the Book of Yahweh and get it. It takes one paragraph has, depending on how long the paragraph is, but one paragraph could contain 20 sermons showing here a little and there a little. And of course, that's the reason the word for our generation means repetition. That's one of the meanings of it. It's a time period set and means repetition, to where we take a word from a sentence and we show you the meaning of this word. If you put the word, no, I better not bring that up now. You'll be calling me all week long. I'll wait. Maybe the elders will let me speak next week. If they do, maybe I'll bring it out at that time. Yahweh bless you, and I'll turn the services back to the next leader. I love you!